Nate Johnson and Alvin Bernstein had already been celebrating for an hour, as had a couple of dozen friends and journalists, some from Scientific American, who'd assembled in Jeremy's honor. Most were well into the buzz phase of the evening and enjoying themselves immensely, mostly because journalists tended to be budget conscious and Nate was picking up the tab. Nate was Jeremy's agent. Alvin, a freelance cameraman, was Jeremy's best friend, and they'd gathered at the trendy bar on the Upper West Side to celebrate Jeremy's appearance on ABC's Primetime Live. Commercials for Primetime Live had been airing most of the week, most of which featured Jeremy front and center and the promise of a major exposé, and interview requests were pouring into Nate's office from around the country. Earlier that afternoon, People magazine had called, and the interview was scheduled for the following Monday morning. There hadn't been enough time to organize a private room for the get-together, but no one seemed to mind. With its long granite bar and dramatic lighting, the packed bar was Yuppieville. While the journalists from Scientific American tended to wear tweed sport jackets with pocket protectors and were crowded into one corner of the room discussing photons, most of the other patrons looked as if they'd dropped by after finishing up work on Wall Street or Madison Avenue. Italian suit jackets slung over the backs of chairs, Hermes ties loosened, men who seemed to want to do nothing more than to scope out the women in attendance while flashing their Rolexes. Women, straight from work in publishing and advertising, were dressed in designer skirts and in possibly high heels, sipping flavored martinis while pretending to ignore them. Jeremy himself had his eye on a tall redhead standing at the other end of the bar who appeared to be glancing his way. He wondered if she'd recognized him from the television ads, or whether she just wanted some company. She turned away, apparently uninterested, but then looked his way again. With her gaze lingering just a little bit longer this time, Jeremy raised his glass.
"Come on, Jeremy, pay attention," Nate said, nudging him with his elbow. "You're on TV. Don't you want to see how you did?"
Jeremy turned from the redhead. Glancing up at the screen again, he saw himself sitting opposite Diane Sawyer. Strange, he thought, like being in two places at once, but it still didn't seem quite real. Nothing in the past 3 weeks had seemed real, despite his years in media. On screen, Diane was describing him as America's most esteemed scientific journalist. Not only had the story turned out to be everything he'd wanted, but Nate was even talking to Primetime Live about Jeremy doing regular stories for them, with a possibility of additional features on Good Morning America. Though many journalists believed television was less important than other, more serious forms of reporting, it didn't stop most of them from secretly viewing television as the Holy Grail, by which they meant big money. Despite the congratulations, envy was in the air, a sensation as foreign to him as space travel. After all, journalists of his stripe weren't exactly at the top of the media pecking order until today.
"Did she just call you esteemed?" Alvin asked. "You write about Bigfoot and the legend of Atlantis."
"Shh," Nate said, his eyes glued to the television. "I'm trying to hear this. It could be important for Jeremy's career."
As Jeremy's agent, Nate was forever promoting events that could be important for Jeremy's career, for the simple reason that freelancing wasn't all that lucrative. Years earlier, when Nate was starting out, Jeremy had pitched a book proposal, and they'd been working together ever since, simply because they'd become friends.
Whatever, Alvin said, dismissing the scolding.
Meanwhile, flickering on the screen behind Diane Sawyer and Jeremy were the final moments of Jeremy's performance on the daytime television show, in which Jeremy had pretended to be a man grieving the boyhood death of his brother, a boy Clausen claimed to be channeling for Jeremy's benefit.
"He's with me," Clausen could be heard announcing. "He wants you to let him go, Thad."
The picture shifted to capture Jeremy's rendition of an anguished guest, his face contorted. Clausen nodded in the background, either oozing sympathy or looking constipated, depending on the perspective.
"Your mother never changed his room, the room you shared with him. She insisted that it be kept unchanged, and you still had to sleep there," Clausen went on.
"Yes," Jeremy gasped.
"But you were frightened in there, and in your anger, you took something of his, something very personal, and buried it in the backyard."
"Yes,"
Jeremy managed again, as if too emotional to say more.
His retainer.
Oh, Jeremy cried, bringing his hands to his face.
He loves you, but you have to realize that he's at peace now. He has no anger toward you.
Oh, Jeremy wailed again, contorting his face even more. In the bar, Nate watched the clips in silent concentration. Alvin, on the other hand, was laughing as he raised his beer high. Give that man an Oscar, he shouted. It was rather impressive, wasn't it? Jeremy said, grinning.
I mean it, you two, Nate said, not hiding his irritation. Talk during the commercials.
Whatever, Alvin said again. Whatever had always been Alvin's favorite word. On Primetime Live, the videotape faded to black, and the camera focused on Diane Sawyer and Jeremy, sitting across from each other once again.
So nothing Timothy Clausen said was true? Diane asked.
Not a thing, Jeremy said. As you already know, my name isn't Thad, and while I do have five brothers, they're all alive and well.
Diane held a pen over a pad of paper, as if she was about to take notes. So how did Clausen do this?